You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
For years, ExxonMobil's local refinery in the small, mostly African-American community of Charlton Pollard, Texas, had been spewing at least 135 toxic chemicals into the neighborhood, causing health problems that range from asthma and hair loss to cancer and heart disease, and leading residents and environmental activists to file a civil rights complaint against the oil giant in April 2000. In a recent investigation for The Intercept called A Legacy of Environmental Racism, journalist Sharon Lerner reveals that ExxonMobil is still pumping toxins into Charlton Pollard 17 years after the civil rights complaint was filed and even after the EPA promised to investigate in 2003 but then did nothing to revoke ExxonMobil's permit. The article, which was reported in partnership with the investigative fund at the Nation Institute, is published on The Intercept's website. I'm very pleased it has brought Sharon Lerner back to our show. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Hi.
The refinery, which is in the suburb of Beaumont, Texas, processes sour crude oil. What's sour crude oil?
It's oil or petroleum that has a lot of sulfur in it that needs to be removed in order to make it useful as gasoline and other things.
How long has that plant been in Charlton Pollard?
I don't know when it was originally built, but certainly for, it has actually, I can tell you it's been there since, the actual oil production facility and petroleum processing plant has been there for a long time. It has evolved in the ownership. Like at one point it was Exxon, and then Exxon and Mobil merged, and then it was Exxon Mobil. And that has been, I believe, about 20 years that it's belonged to Exxon Mobil.
Aren't there many refineries and petrochemical plants in that Gulf area near the Spindletop Well?
Yes, exactly. So that's where people may be familiar with that, the image of the gushing well, which has become sort of, the symbol of oil boom, the oil boom in Texas. And that was right there, right near there. And that, I believe it was 1908, I hope that's right, is when the huge refining operation sort of took off there. And it's not just that one refinery right nearby. They're maybe like 15 minutes away. There's a town called Port Arthur, which is really dealing with many of the same issues in terms of pollution. And they also have a lot of refineries, a big refinery there. Theirs used to be run by Shell and is now completely Saudi-owned.
Do they all have the so-called flare events?
Yes, that is a common feature. So we're all familiar with these kind of pipes that poke up into the sky and then have a little flame on top. Those are the flares, and flare events are when those pipes give off like a huge, they release a whole bunch of pollution through them and ignite it. Some of it burns, some of it doesn't. But you can experience it from the outside when this happens. You see a giant fireball, basically. And that happens with regularity, as far as I know, or at all the refineries, and certainly in Beaumont, where I was writing about it.
And they release at least 135 toxic chemicals. What are some of them? Are they mostly carcinogenic?
Not mostly carcinogen, though there certainly are a big number of carcinogens. But there are, in terms of sour crude, because there's the sulfur coming up, there's sulfur dioxide, and hydrogen sulfide. And those are two of the big ones of concern. And in terms of non-carcinogenic health harming chemicals or VOCs. Well, some of those are carcinogens, but also particulate matter, which is something that is a big concern around the world. We know it sometimes as PM2.5 or the bigger particles or PM10. So those are just some of the many, many things coming out of that plant.
And what are VOCs?
The VOC stands for, I'm not going to get it right. Vinyl, you know what? I'm not going to get it right on off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
But they're not good to breathe in.
Volatile organic compounds, yes.
Yes.
And they are not good to breathe in, and some of them are carcinogenic.
So people try to leave this neighborhood. One family with a 12-year-old daughter recently left because they feared the pollution was the reason that she began losing her hair after they'd moved in. But why is it difficult for residents to leave the neighborhood?
Well, so it is, you know, the question is, who wants to live in a heavily polluted neighborhood? And the answer, of course, is no one. So who does live there? The people who don't have, who can't afford to live elsewhere, basically. So, or people, I would say that with some overlap with people who have been there for a long time and this is what they know. And certainly a lot of those people leave if they can. So people stay there because they feel like they don't have other options. And because there is so much pollution there, real estate is very, very inexpensive. So you can buy a house there for $500. But, you know, most people don't want to because you're literally inundated with air pollution. And so people, again, don't leave because they either don't have any other options or feel that they don't.
And do many of them work for Exxon?
You know, they don't. And one would assume that, that's why you would stay. But in fact, Exxon hasn't been a huge employer of this area in this immediate area, which is right on the fence line. I didn't meet many people who either had worked there or knew people who had worked there.
Go ahead.
I think, again, those are actually relatively well-paying jobs. And again, I think if you have one, you're not going to live there, probably.
Do the local residents believe that the fact that many are experiencing hair loss, a variety of cancers, asthma, heart disease, and learning disabilities, among other things, are directly linked to the pollution from the refinery?
Well, let me back up for a sec. So for the hair loss, you know, the hair loss, that was certainly, you know, there was a family living next door to someone I had interviewed who moved away because they were afraid their daughter, when they moved to the neighborhood, began losing her hair. And they were afraid that it had something to do with all the pollution that they knew was there. Did it? Did it not? That's hard to say. And I didn't actually speak with them directly, but I did speak with many people who had all sorts of ailments, heart problems, who had had strokes, who had cancer. And all those things are directly related. It is incredibly difficult to pin blame for any one disease or incidence of disease on anything, really. And so this is part of the problem communities like this face, because, you know, someone will say, well, you know, I talked to people who had, like, one man, he had had a stroke in his 30s. His parents had died very young. His grandfather had died very young. His siblings were all sick. So it was just like this sort of sickness all around. And can you say for sure that any of those, or all of those things can you pin them to pollution? Not necessarily, but you can say that all of these things, the incidence of all these things is increased. The likelihood is increased by being exposed to these pollutants, and they happen to be very common in this area. So a lot of people, I think this is the problem that they face. You know, how do you prove this? Well, in court, you can have a really hard time. But in life, you know, if you know that, and some of the acute symptoms, there's absolutely no question. So one of the things that happens immediately is, and it happened to me, is, you know, you get these symptoms, headaches, and you get sort of respiratory problems. And people talk to me about, you know, they're constantly congested. They leave the area for a vacation or just for work or whatever. It goes away, and they come, you know, when they return home, it comes back. So that, you know, for sure, is completely related to the air quality in that area. The rest of it, sort of lies in this murky area where common sense says, you know, these chemicals cause these problems, and you have these problems where these chemicals are abundant. So, a lot, you know, people don't wait around to kind of try to parse it, you know, parse out the science or work it out legally if they don't have to.
What did the residents of Charlton Pollard argue when they filed a formal complaint with the EPA 17 years ago?
So these problems have been going on at least that long, longer even.
Was Rex Tillerson ExxonMobil CEO at the time?
No, he wasn't, actually. And when they first filed the complaint, the two companies hadn't even merged yet, Exxon and Mobil. But what was going on, you know, basically the refinery was about to expand in 1999. And already, and the pollution, I should say, was worse back then because there were a lot of pollution control equipment pieces that weren't in use yet. And there was less awareness of the danger of all these things and less attention paid to them. So here there's heavy pollution, you know, the people next to the plant are really feeling it and experiencing health effects, and then they find out that the refinery is going to expand. And so they wanted to have a hearing about it and voice their objections. And the state environmental authority at the time said, no, we're going to just offset, you know, whatever increases in pollution from the refinery with decreases at a nearby chemical plant, and we don't need to have a hearing. And so in response, the people in the community filed a complaint, and they went, you know, above the state to the feds, to the EPA, and said, you know, they detailed all the pollution and their fears that it was only going to get worse with the expansion. And then they kind of went further and said, this is a violation of our civil rights because you're expanding this plant, which already gives off so much pollution, in an area that is overwhelmingly African-American. And at the time, the area, Charlton Pollard, was 95% African-American. So they said in their complaint in 2000, this is a violation of our civil rights. And they were allowed to, they could say this because using the civil rights law, you know, anyone who is a recipient of federal funds isn't allowed to discriminate, and the state agency got federal funds, so that was their argument.
And so they issued a Title VI complaint?
Yeah, that's the civil rights complaint. It's called Title VI because that's the clause in the civil rights law.
How long before the EPA responded?
Well, in 2003, they sent out a letter saying, okay, we've gotten your complaint, we're going to investigate.
2003, this is after 2000.
So 3 years later, we're going to investigate. And then that was it. They never heard from them again about this until 2017. So, you know, at first, the people were really excited that they actually got a response and they were going to have an investigation. And there was the sense that, you know, there had been a lot of activity in the area, a lot of community kind of meetings and protests and people getting really excited about the idea that they were going to try to hold the company accountable for all this pollution that they were dealing with. And so after they got the response, it was like, wow, we're getting somewhere. And I think over the 14 years since that, you know, that excitement died off to the point where there is, I found no one in the area who was optimistic at all that this was going to get resolved.
Did the EPA ever consult the residents of Charlton Pollard?
They didn't. And so what happened was...
So we're talking about two presidencies and now the Trump presidency.
Let's see, yes. Mm-hmm.
Or the end of the Clinton presidency, and then the Bush presidency, the Obama presidency. We're going to go into the variations after we take a little break. But I'm speaking with Sharon Lerner, whose article, A Legacy of Environmental Racism, is available through The Intercept. So we have a link to it on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate. Stay with us for more. We're back with Sharon Lerner. Her article, A Legacy of Environmental Racism, is available through The Intercept. You report that both African Americans and Latinos are more likely than whites to live near the country's 149 refineries. Doesn't that mean that they're being subjected to higher levels of pollution overall and suffering more health problems?
It does. It does. It's absolutely true. And, you know, it's hard to, you know, I'm sure people in you know, who are listening are familiar with the terms environmental justice and environmental racism. And you know, there are so many different pieces that go into this. A lot of it, you know, it has to do, we were talking about real estate value, that's part of it. But in the end, what you have is that both African and African-American and Latino people in our country are both more exposed to these toxins, have higher levels in their blood. There's one study that looked at 14 different toxins and found that African-Americans had higher exposure levels than whites for 13 of them, and Latinos had the highest level of pollution overall. So it's, you know, you can, it kind of makes sense when you think about it, when who can afford to live where and what's nearby where you're living. But the end result, you know, you can see it in our bodies. What kind of things end up in our blood?
This past May, the EPA officially closed the case. What did they say in their letter? Were there any changes proposed?
Yeah. So the EPA recently has gone through a sort of burst of closing these environmental justice cases, these Title VI cases. And, you know, in a way, you can see that as good, because basically what's happened before that is that people file all these suits saying, you know, we feel we're being discriminated against. And overwhelmingly, nothing happens. So either the cases sit unattended or they're rejected, meaning they'll be accepted for an investigation, but the investigation doesn't happen, or they say, we're not going to investigate, or sometimes they'll investigate and they say, no, there is no discrimination. It's incredibly rare for these to have an outcome where the EPA says, you know what, you're right, you're being discriminated against, and we're going to do something about it, which is, of course, what people are hoping when they file these things. So in May of this year, the EPA sent a letter saying that their case was being closed, resolved. And basically it said that the community would have, it promised two community meetings and one air monitor. And so I think everyone I spoke to who was involved with the complaint felt, and who just lived there, felt this was inadequate. Like a community meeting where I guess people will answer questions won't necessarily address the problem. And the monitor that they're proposing is more than a mile away from the plant on the other side of the community from where people, from, it's way past where people live. So the community is right up against this fence. And if you go through the community across the sort of major road that, you know, sets it off from the rest of Beaumont and further, then you come to the place where they propose putting the monitor. And of course, if you think about pollution and how it travels, it's not going to register. Air pollution is going to become more and more dispersed as it travels, so it won't accurately reflect what, in fact, the people living next to the plant are breathing in.
You found that the Charlton Pollard wasn't the only community to file a civil rights complaint with the EPA around that time and still waiting for a response. What did Marianne Engelman Lotto, an environmental attorney, tell you about these cases?
So Marianne Engelman Lotto went, you know, was thinking about these cases, and you're right, there are lots of them. A lot of communities have filed complaints with the EPA saying that they've been subject to discrimination. And she went back and looked at them and picked out several that were more than 10 years old. And when you think about it, they're supposed to resolve these cases within 200 days, I believe it is. So 200 days versus 10 years, you know, there are a number of them that she could choose from that had been open for more than 10 years. So she picked five and decided to sue not just over one of them, but over five of them. And the situation in Charlton Pollard was one of them, but she included four others. And her thought was, look, the EPA tends to just close these cases, and they say stuff like they said in Beaumont, okay, you have an air monitor, done, closed. And she calls it, I don't know if it's a legal term, but mooting it out, that just, you know, we're done with that, you're next. And she felt like if she just, in the past, if people had brought one to their attention legally, sued over one, and said, you know, this has not been adequately addressed, they just kind of moot it out and close it. You know, if they say, we need you to address this case, they tend to close it without doing anything profound to actually change the situation. So she decided to sue over five, and she did, including Charlton Pollard, and all five of them were closed. So her fear was that if she sued over just one, they would, like, close the books on one, and in fact, they closed the books on five. So that's part of what the story is about, or, you know, was trying to address the bigger problem that the EPA seems to have in actually taking these claims seriously.
There was a complaint from Flint, Michigan over an incinerator power plant that dated back to 1992. The complaint focused accused the plant of practicing environmental racism. Was that case also closed? I mean, Flint's had a lot of problems.
No, and this, of course, predated the water from 1992. So this was really a sad and interesting situation. So there is this, originally when they filed this complaint, the plant hadn't been built yet. And it was supposed to be burning hazardous waste, which included things with lead paint, and they felt it would be very dangerous. And the folks who made this complaint were objecting again to the site because, again, it was in a mostly African-American neighborhood. And again, their complaint did not get investigated. And they actually filed two different complaints. Neither got investigated. And their response, so this was another one that was closed out 25 years after the complaint was initially filed. And basically, they didn't address, you know, they didn't address, how could they, the underlying situation, which was, we don't want this plant built here. And in fact, the plant was built there 22 years ago. And since then has been putting all the things out into the air that the people in the community feared. And one of the striking things about that situation was there are four people who initially filed this complaint. Three of them are dead at this point. You know, partly that's a reflection of all the time that's passed. So one of them died in her early 50s and lived near the plant, and she died of cancer. So was that related? Again, who knows? But I think it really underscores how inadequate that response is.
I'm speaking with Sharon Lerner, whose article, A Legacy of Environmental Racism, is in The Intercept. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Have there been complaints from the residents of Linden and Rahway, New Jersey, who've been affected by the pollution coming from ExxonMobil's refineries near the New Jersey Turnpike, something that any driver down the turnpike will be aware of?
You know, I don't know. I haven't looked into that, but there are certainly numerous Exxon plants that have been the subjects of complaints. This is not the only one, and this isn't even the worst one. Recently, there was a case over an ExxonMobil refinery in Baytown, also in Texas. And that actually just, they had a suit over it, not just a complaint, but that was settled with ExxonMobil having to pay $20 million penalty for violating the Clean Air Act. So, you know, this is part of a much bigger problem. And, of course, it's not just ExxonMobil. You know, there are refineries and all sorts of chemical facilities around the country that are emitting huge amounts of pollution. So, but, you know, I picked this particular spot because they had this really old, old complaint that was quote-unquote resolved to no one's satisfaction or no one in the community's satisfaction. And also because it's by this refinery, which is, you know, the source of great wealth in this country. You know, and it's a place where we're going to see, you know, only more activity and increasing pollution, I think, as the Trump administration moves forward.
You found that some of the biggest frustrations over the handling of civil rights grew during Barack Obama's presidency. Didn't the EPA actually stop checking the email box that received civil rights complaints for about a year between 2014 and 2015?
Yeah, that was. And, you know, I think it's true what you just said. There was a lot of frustration about the handling of environmental justice under Obama, just as there has been really since the beginning of the EPA. And this is a problem that we've been dealing with or not dealing with for a very long time. So that's all true. And yes, there was almost a year, was it more than a year, when the EPA wasn't checking its mailbox for complaints about civil rights. And one of them actually was a complaint from a Flint resident about the water quality. It just sat there for many months. So this is true. And I mean, you can argue that that's about incompetence more than ideology. I don't think he wanted that to happen, Barack Obama. But I think that even though there were many disappointments about the handling of environmental justice under his administration, the people I talked to who were very close to it and some of it who were in the EPA at that time say it was really that there was, as much as there was some incompetence or some failures and you know, not enough time, money, energy spent on these things, there were also steps forward. And I think that's true, that there was, you know, it's a mixed record. And I think that we're seeing a not mixed record with this administration, because I'm not hearing or seeing anything positive when it comes to environmental justice.
Is Exxon the only company that gets away with violating its permits? ExxonMobil was fined just $7,001 for an unpermitted release in April 2016 of nearly 2,125 pounds of carbon monoxide, sulfur oxide, and other VOCs. Right. That, I don't think, will deter a company that's valued at $343 billion and whose earnings have actually surged 122% since President Trump took office.
Exactly. No, that's exactly right. So enforcement is already pretty laughable. Last year, in Texas in particular, I think we could say, and last year that state punished fewer than 1% of illegal pollution releases. So that's pretty tiny. And when they are punished, yes, like that $7,001 penalty, like what does that mean to a company that's, you know, the size of ExxonMobil? Nothing, right?
There are also a number of oil industry lobbyists now heading the federal office of the EPA.
Yeah.
You write, these appointments reinforce the sense that the oil industry has now utterly captured the agency responsible for regulating its activities. Did the EPA respond to any of your questions for the article?
No. They sent me, what they did was send me a link to their letter, which I already had and which was public. So, no, they didn't answer any of my specific questions.
Will the Keystone Pipeline have any impact on all of this?
Yeah, that's part of what is going to move, that is scaring people who live and, you know, work and care about this area, is that the Keystone Pipeline is going to it's basically being finished now and is going to deliver more than 800,000 barrels of oil a day from Canada to this area, the Gulf area, which includes Port Arthur and Beaumont. The pipeline actually ends kind of between these two. And so at the same time, you have, not coincidentally, I think, a proposed expansion from the refinery and the chemical plant, also owned by ExxonMobil there. And along with that, the expectation there that the pollution in the area will increase. That's part of what's another part of what's really sad for and tragic, really, for this area is that, you know, it's not just that they're not getting it resolved; they're moving backwards. It looks like.
And you report that during the first 6 months of this new administration, there's a 60% drop in civil penalties against polluters, which I guess means fewer fines. We will continue to follow this story with you. Thank you so much for coming on our show again today, Sharon. Sharon Lerner's article, A Legacy of Environmental Racism, is in The Intercept.